Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
So, anyway, what's going on tonight? I hope everybody's having a really nice and safe and great week. I know I've had a very productive week. Hope all you hope everything's going great now. Don't know whether or not I am recording this on video, so we're just going to go with it. We have a special replay tonight. 27 years ago, my friend Alicia had one heck of an experience. We'll just leave it at that. Horrific experience. She was on 1 year ago today. Might have been a little bit less than 1 year, but like a day, a year ago she was here, discussing the Versace murders. And you're going to say, well, Jim, you know, what about the Versace murder? Well, what about? Well, Alicia was supposed to be one of the victims. It's a strange thing of fate, right? Strange list of events. Some might dare to call it a near miss. She was spared. Her co-worker was not. So tonight we're going to be discussing her thing. We're going to be revisiting it. We'll see how it goes. Again, new software. We're learning our way around here. So we'll see how it goes. I don't, your Safety FM people will hear this. The people on the other streamers, not so sure. So let us go. And before we do that, we're going to do the Safety Wars news for today. Hold on here.
In residential constructions. Region 7 hosts environmental justice tour and listening session in Omaha, Nebraska.
Hold on, we'll start over.
Here is today's news from Safety Wars. Environmental Protection Agency news. The agency announces Energy Star NextGen certification for new homes and apartments. The agency has launched a new Energy Star NextGen certification for new homes and apartments, promoting energy efficiency in residential constructions. Region 7 hosts environmental justice tour and listening session in Omaha, Nebraska. In Omaha, Nebraska, Region 7 conducted an environmental justice tour and listening session in collaboration with local organizations to discuss community concerns and environmental challenges. The agency has made available grants to help tribes and U.S. territories replace diesel equipment, aiming to reduce harmful emissions and improve air quality. Department of Labor News. A Maryland concrete subcontractor was found to have wrongly classified workers on a federally funded project in Washington, D.C., denying them proper wages and benefits. An administrative law judge upheld this finding, mandating the payment of $186 in owed wages. The U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration is urging employers and workers in the construction industry to participate in the annual National Safety Stand Down event focused on preventing falls, the leading cause of worker fatalities in construction. Safety violations found after truck accident in Nebraska. The Department of Labor has found that an Arkansas restaurant operator illegally terminated an employee who took federally protected medical leave, emphasizing the enforcement of worker rights under federal law. Two construction contractors in North Jersey have agreed to pay $215 in penalties and implement extensive safety measures to settle claims of repeated fall hazards at their job sites. Legal action ensures restitution for misused employee benefit funds. A former attorney and their law firm were ordered by a federal court to pay over $1 million in restitution and penalties for mishandling the funds of the United Employee Benefit Fund, demonstrating the department's commitment to protecting employee benefits. Here's a summary of the latest stories from the U.S. Chemical Safety Board CSB over the past week. New NFPA guidance. The CSB praised the National Fire Protection Association's new guidance, NFPA 401, designed to prevent fires and explosions associated with hazardous materials. This follows numerous recommendations by the CSB stemming from investigations into such incidents. To a 22 BP Husky refinery incident, an update was provided on the ongoing investigation into the 2022 chemical release and fire at the BP Husky refinery in Oregon, Ohio. This tragic event resulted in two fatalities and substantial damage, with the board continuing to analyze safety protocols and industry standards to prevent future incidents. The board has initiated investigations into two toxic chemical incidents that occurred in Louisiana in 2023. One involved the release of hydrogen fluoride and chlorine, and the other, ethylene oxide. These incidents fortunately did not result in any fatalities, but they highlighted the risks associated with toxic chemical releases. But 20 Biolab Chemical Fire. The final report on the 2020 chemical fire and toxic gas release at Biolab in Westlake, LA, was released. Triggered by Hurricane Laura, the event emphasized the need for better emergency and hazard management during extreme weather, with recommendations for both the facility and regulatory agencies to enhance safety protocols. For Safety Wars News, this is Oliver S. Radowisko.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that actually addresses your hazards in your workplaces and is not standardized baloney from 25 years ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call Jim Pozel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
So here we are back again. We're learning. We're getting better here with this, which is good. Thanks for everybody for bearing with me. Anyway, this story hits home after what happened in my town the week after Christmas with the Morgan family. Every time I hear one of these stories, it's more and more senseless to me with this. And my friend Alicia was firstly impacted by this story here with William Reese, her friend. You'll hear some details, but senseless. It's pointless, this type of stuff that goes on, these murders. And every time, and it's not, I've known of three situations here that hit a little bit close to home. One of them was the anthrax cleanups, of course, because I was personally involved in those, very high profile. The second one was the Brittany Murphy death, and I believe it was 2009, December. The reason being is that had gone to the same grammar school. I was many years ahead of her, but I knew her family. I knew her extended family, her cousins. We went to school together, and basically we were at the same church, right? The same religious institution in Fords, New Jersey, our Redeemer. And every time one of these stories comes out, like a movie, documentary. This past weekend was with the anthrax cleanups again. We've gotten two documentaries the last year, one on Netflix, one on CNN last weekend. It stirs up a lot of feelings in people. With Brittany Murphy, I know that her teachers at that school, Our Redeemer Lutheran School, that's not there anymore, it hits them at home. Every time this is brought up, and that Alicia is not an exception to this. Every year is a solemn anniversary for her, right? But the purpose of our program is not making the sensational headlines, trying to get the word out here. It's not what the point is of the show. The point is, what do we do? How do we move on? And how do we have some resilience here? And I'm going to tell you, if you are experiencing mental health issues, a crisis, you're thinking about killing yourself or anybody else, don't. There is help out there, pound 988 on your phone. Many different resources there. If you get that angry, take a break. Go have a cup of chamomile. Calm down. Stay away from illegal substances, that sort of thing. So with that, now, without any further commentary, I am going to, let's see, we'll get Alicia's interview right here.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity, the highway to New York, this is Safety Wars for Tuesday, May 9th, 2023. We are waiting for a guest to come on to the show. A very dear friend of mine today is a very somber day for her. And she was going to talk about that. Basically, 27 years ago, doesn't seem that, I feel old. Today, Versace, one of the last, the second to last Versace murder took place. Basically, the whole story is this. Been a lot of movies, TV movies, and everything else. So, essentially, we have this guy, Andrew Command, for whatever reason, a serial killer. They, five people he killed. And I'm reading from the Washington Post from July 17th, 1997. And from the border of liberty and prosperity, the highway to New York, this is Safety Wars for Tuesday, May 9th, 2023. We are waiting for a guest to come on to the show. A very dear friend of mine today is a very somber day for her. And she was going to talk about that. Basically, 27 years ago, doesn't seem that, I feel old. Today, Versace.
Okay, we are back online with the video.
The Versace murder took place. Basically, the whole story is this. Been a lot of movies, TV movies, and everything else. So, essentially, we have this guy, Andrew Cannon. For whatever reason, a serial killer, five people he killed. And I'm reading from the Washington Post from July 17th, 1997. He, for unknown reasons, he went on a killing spree and killed full ending with Versace, who was a fashion designer. His name brand is still out there. I believe his family is still in the business, so to speak. So basically, he went out and he killed a man named Jeffrey Trail. And then he went on and killed another gentleman, David J. Madsen, in Minneapolis, right? And then he ended up killing another guy, Lee Miglin. Then he went out and killed William Reese, but it was also almost through a strange set of circumstances, it could have very easily have been by the guest that we're going to have on, Alicia Bjornson. And I'll let her tell her story and her thoughts on this. And then eventually he went to and he killed Gianni Versace shortly thereafter after he stole William Reese's vehicle. And basically that's what happened here. So let me see with Alicia what's going on here.
Good to see you, Jim.
Hey.
Thank you for inviting me.
Boy, it's nice to see you. I don't recall. Hold on. Let me see. So I just briefly, welcome to Safety Wars. You are like our first live guest here, believe it or not.
All right.
And you are on live. No, I knew this had happened or almost had happened. You had experience with this situation. I didn't go into on the program what exactly we had, what exactly your story was. But I went over briefly what happened with Andrew Cannanan, with the other four victims, and then and everything. How this happened was today, Alicia posted something about the murder of her friend, I'm kicking myself, William Reese, right, on her Facebook page. And I said, son of a gun, I wanted to talk about workplace violence this week. And at least one day. And this was a segue, unfortunately, into the whole subject on workplace violence. So people always say, well, what does this have to do with safety? Well, guess what? Workplace violence is a safety issue. It is an OSHA recordable issue. We know what that is as safety professionals. If you're not, go check my Saturday program from a couple of weeks ago, where I go into all of what that is. And basically, last week we had fall protection, construction fall protection. 400 to 500 people, depending on the year, die in construction due to falls from height. We have a whole week dedicated to it. Well, about the same number of people die in workplace violence issues every year. We don't have a week dedicated to them. I think that, no, I can't make the agencies do things, but I can make myself do something. So I wanted to talk about workplace violence, your experience with this, and you had some very, you know, when we spoke before, you had some very pointed thoughts on it. Here's some statistics for you, right? 23% of employees worldwide have experienced some form of workplace violence. 481 homicides in the United States in 2021 in the workplace. That includes 387 workplace shootings, which led to death. We know that at least 25% of these go unreported in violation of OSHA, or they're public employees and they work outside the OSHA rubric, outside the OSHA scheme. 50% involves people in the medical field. Pretty startling, right? Women experience 30,000 sexual assaults at work in this country a year. 60.4 million Americans are bullied at work. Going on, and it goes on and on and on, these statistics here. And we'll get into some of this other stuff. I didn't, you know, I could go on for an hour here. I have an hour worth of talking material. Which Alicia is not surprised I would have an hour's worth to talk about, right? So I've known Alicia since the late 1990s, just after this happened. So I went over some of the brief history. What happened that day? 27 years ago today. It's amazing.
26. Yeah.
What exactly happened with this? If you're there, it's whatever you're comfortable with. I'm not going to.
You know, it's one of these days where the day had proven to be normal at the site. We'd had a group of elementary school kids from an adjacent community come, and what they had all been eyeing was Mr. Miglin's
Okay, let's car. Let's back this up
yeah.
a little bit. Alicia was a, correct me if I'm wrong on the title, one of the state historians mm-hmm. at a historical site in New Jersey. What was the name of that site?
Fort Mott State Park.
Fort Mott State Park. And here's a little bit of trivia for you. There's a little bit of Delaware in New Jersey, on the New Jersey side of the river. And Delaware owns the entire Delaware River up to the shoreline in New Jersey, basically. And there's a cemetery that's associated with Fort Mott, which is a historical site in New Jersey. And this is the site of
Yeah, the Finns Point National Cemetery is a national cemetery mm-hmm. that was originally part of the military base. And when the park became a park, it stayed part of the Veterans Administration.
Mm-hmm.
So it is still, it remained a federal site. It's a half mile away from the fort.
Right.
And our colleagues at the time worked fairly closely. It was administered by Beverly National Cemetery.
Right. Okay. So that's the whole setting here. And there was a group of children that had come to the park.
They had been coming for a tour. And in the parking lot at that time had been this very shiny green car. And it stuck out because it wasn't from New Jersey. It happened to be much fancier than most people. And it was the color of the tractors that we see around here on a regular basis.
That was a green 1994 Lexus from the previous victim, Lee Miglin, from Chicago, basically.
Yeah. And I think what really was so striking is I grew up in Illinois outside of Chicago, and you start hearing the story unfold from what had happened in Chicago, but not expecting, nobody knew where this car had ended up. And it turned out to be where we were working. So that's part of the backstory. And the unusual feature was at the end of the day, we just didn't see our colleague. We go home, we leave about the end of the day, and it's not till the story starts unfolding three hours or so after work that there has been a horrible tragedy.
Right.
You just don't know it, but there were other people that were at the site. We weren't the full complement of staff, but I think what happens within the investigation for this is that the real striking thing is you don't really have email, you have no Facebook, no Instagram, no social media. EasyPass wasn't common.
Right.
So there were a lot of features that investigations probably from a law enforcement side, and I can't really speak to how law enforcement does investigations, but the interview process trying to figure out what people was very different because you didn't have Ring cameras or anything like that.
Right. Well, in 1997, you had the advent of cell phones. I believe I had a cell phone in 97. Actually, probably at about this time in 97 is when I got my first cell phone. That's a story for another day. No email. I had just gotten email in 97. I got email right around this time. You were probably in the same boat, right? Most people, no social media. That most you had chat rooms on, I was on CompuServe or AOL or something like that.
Mindspring?
I think Mindspring you were on, right?
Yes.
I remember that. I think you still have that email address.
No, I don't. I'm not sure it totally exists any longer. But I had a pager. That was the funny thing. I don't think I had come over to cell phone yet at that time.
Right. EasyPass, as I recall, did not become common in New Jersey until like 99, roughly, because I remember I got it in New York because I was doing a lot of work in New York. And I was doing a lot of work in New York and I got EasyPass because of it was much easier to deal with stuff. And, so you're dealing with a totally different time. You even had mentioned you were shocked that the Washington Post tracked you down to write their article, which I read from. Before you came on the air.
Okay.
So I guess I don't even know if the new reporters would have that skill set how to do that back in, today. Now, back in the day, that was different. So this was like the last major case, it seems major before all this technology came in that was well, documented. There's been movies and everything else. So, what else did you want to talk about with what happened?
As you had been hearing of the story unfolding, because that had been in the news prior to Bill's murder, you had heard some of the story on national news. But since Bill was a federal employee, suddenly you have a higher level as an observer being nearby. Suddenly you have federal authorities involved, not just local authorities trying to string things together. I think the saddest thing is, you know, how does this happen? You know, when you're in the role of public service for Bill, he was the caretaker of the cemetery for over 20 years. And everything was done with such care that if somebody wanted to call or was looking for a veteran that was buried there, you had the opportunity to speak to somebody who knew and probably had spent time working with the families for a burial that was there. And he was just such an exceptional human being.
Yeah, I'm reading this article here. From my understanding, his wife had a major health issue, from what I recall.
Yes.
And his son was a special needs person.
That's correct.
And basically, the care and of both of them had been severely negatively impacted by this whole tragedy. Obviously, with any tragedy like this, it's a horrible thing. I can't imagine going through something like this. I don't ever want to be able to imagine going anything through this. And within 3 to 4 years, the family didn't exist anymore, basically, is what from what I recall. Is that correct? Or
I believe, you know, this is, you know, as you come to this time of the year, each year you think about this and you just try to remember what we sometimes take for granted now, or what makes a bad day. And you always think, you know, a bad day is when you go to a place you love to be and you don't make it home. That's a bad day at work. And, you know, even at life, and you just have to stop and think about what you're grateful for and remember with gratitude, and then try to remember those that mattered. And Bill is someone who mattered.
Yeah, you always used to talk about him. And I would have loved to meet him with that now over here. And I know, how did your life change after this? With him, or your working life, I should say. I know that there were protocols put into place. And there were protocols put into place over 10 years, probably, after this happened. So
yeah, I think people became more aware of when you were solo, about perhaps whether it was formal or informal, but how your supervisor addressed the fact that maybe you didn't need to be alone on a site at certain times. We had a bell at least on one of the doors so that if you were in a building, you would notice if somebody came in the backside of a structure. It's one of the reasons when cell phones became more available. Just even today, you keep your phone nearby just in case you need it. And I don't think it's necessarily a paranoia, but you're just way more aware. And from those that we knew in law enforcement, they use the phrase BOLO, be on lookout. And just be smart and know what your surroundings are.
Absolutely. Now there's been, I think a lot of the industries, they have what's called a lone worker standard or lone worker protocol, depending on where you are, they call it different things. But essentially, I think this is one of the high profile cases that led to that. All these standards with lone workers, all different types of things out there, protocols and everything else with that. So you're obviously more aware of what's going on. No, you're retired now, but now you were always more aware of what was going on with security and everything else after this. There's been a lot of movies on this whole situation. I know you did a deep dive because you went through this, but you were potentially if the roles were slightly changed, you could have been this victim.
You take a look from that particular day. There were only two of us on the site that were actually park employees, and I think even as news was unfolding that day, that it is said that the murder had happened at the fort, not the cemetery. There was trying to get the information done. And that was just frightening, because when I started hearing that on the news and I started seeing the news, I knew that I was all right. How was my coworker? you didn't even think about what had been happening at the cemetery because they were sort of separate entities. Or was it a visitor? Or was it somebody else who had been there? But as the story started to unfold in the deeper investigation, as they start asking questions, you suddenly realize that the vehicle that we had seen leave did not have our coworker in it, our colleague in it.
Yeah. So with all these movies and everything, was there anything you wanted to do to set the record straight? Because everybody, this is what I've seen on a couple of these shows and documentaries over the years. And by the way, this is like the first time we've had an in-depth conversation on this all these years, because it was very painful, obviously, with this. And we did not have a venue like Safety Wars live, where we're reaching, you know, potentially thousands of people here on this. Was there any, no, they concentrate on Versace, which they should. He was the victim here, one of the victims and everything else, the most high profile one. And the other ones you could go and you could look up. I'm going to mention their names briefly here. In addition to William Reese and Gianni Versace, there was Lee Miglin, David Madsen, Jeffrey Trail, and Jeffrey Trail. Was there anything that any, I don't know if you've seen any documentaries or anything, was there anything in there that you felt could have been done better, said better, anything that stuck out to you with any of these things out there? It was more or less, you mentioned it before, where it was the they don't mention what a good person this was.
And yeah, he was just a family man who was so giving. He did historic reenactments as a Civil War, major Civil War buff. Because he was caring for, at Finns Point is such an exceptional site as a government cemetery. Mm-hmm. The soldiers that died at Peapatch Island were buried at Finns Point. You had Union soldiers who died. So you have Union and Confederate soldiers in the same cemetery. You have some German POWs who are buried there as well as soldiers up, I believe, through the Gulf War. I don't recall right now if the cemetery is still active for those who could be buried, but you're cremated if you're in that cemetery now. Right. And now they've never replaced the caretaker. So you don't have the same type of personal contact when you are there. The fact that Bill was a family man who had his from the Vineland area where he was from, well-known, well-regarded. But sometimes the misinformation that was saying, well, maybe, you know, as they're trying to draw theories, we're saying maybe people, that there was a connection. And until they found out that this was just a random connection, there were other theories that were coming up. Some of the other victims were homosexuals. And you sit and go, I just don't understand, you know, why that necessarily matters. Is it a hate crime? What is it? And perhaps if I've not actually seen some of the documentaries because it's a little too close to home. I know that when I have been to Miami, you can go and they'll show you, they'll do tours to Versace's just to say, this is where somebody was killed. And people are executed. I think people deserve better, those that have died.
Yeah. I know with my experience with the anthrax cleanups, I've seen a couple of those documentaries. I've just had to turn them off, especially the last one. I believe it was on Netflix. Were one of those other, I think it was on Netflix. I just had to turn it off because it was all baloney here. I was like, this is not the way things happened here. And the victim, one of the victims who I'm very friendly with, won't even do interviews or anything with this because she still experiences a lot of PTSD and everything else because the things could have been managed a little bit better. As you know, for years you were there with me working when I was doing the political campaigns.
Yes.
And everything else.
So you remember me on the political campaigns. So.
Yes.
And, and everything else. I mean, let's talk about that. Let's skip. What was my opinion on the Centers for Disease Control after the anthrax cleanups?
You thought it could be done better.
Yes.
You know, without pointing, you know, fingers, there were things that seemed, you know, with this not being my area of expertise, but saying, if you work together, you do the collaboration, you do the initiation, you can do something that causes a timeline that says, this is what you do. This is, you know, your, how do you react? Disaster preparedness. Right. It's better to be prepared than to react. And, you know, even from within my time working within parks, disaster preparedness on all levels, whether or not it's with weather issues, systems failure, just to know what's in your area or what happens in an emergency. Who do you call? What is your phone tree? Incident command, I think, would be the best way now, as it would be called.
Oh. Mm-hmm. We lost the connection there a second. Yeah, they're, well, you, and even with the disaster, I know you had gone to a lot of stuff on art for like museums and stuff.
Yes.
And things that are impacted by hurricanes or other natural disasters, restorative stuff. Well, everything's got to be planned out. Is basically it. You have to assess things, assess, analyze, and act, as you say, the triple A's here.
Yeah.
But that's about it. Unless you want to add anything else, I wanted to get you out of here just to set the record straight for the most part.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I think the main thing to do is just to remember all of the people that perished at the hands of Andrew Kinnanen and to realize the impact, because it goes forward, but just to make sure that you remember them and to give them some honor in thinking of them today. So
absolutely.
Thank you for the opportunity.
No problem, Alicia. And that's it. So wanted to thank you. It's been a long time since I've seen you face to face on this. So
we'll get a chance to catch up sometime.
Absolutely. And that's Alicia Bjornsson. No, you'll find her. If you want to get into contact with her, you'll be able to find her pretty easy, I guess. So,
or reach out to you. We'll chat.
Out to me. I'll get you in contact with her. So that brings back some memories, I guess, of last year. If you have anything to add to this story, please drop me a line, 845-269-5772 or jim@safetywords.com. We're moving right along here. There haven't been any really real developments on this. It's 27 years later. This is probably going to be a tradition as we go along here with this, or we cover this case. Every year we'll try to do this. Something with that. Alicia could not make it on the show today. So what we're going to do is go to our bottom of the hour news. Safety war, and that is, hold on. Bottom of the hour news.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Nick Harper. The adult film star at the center of Donald Trump's hush money trial has begun testifying in a New York court. Stormy Daniels has been recounting her affair with the former president, something that Trump himself denies. He's accused of falsifying business records to cover up the relationship ahead of the 2016 presidential election. FSN's Sally Patterson has more from outside court in Manhattan.
Trump's side really are going to try and discredit Stormy Daniels' testimony in this case, and so what the prosecution is really trying to do is show what an intelligent and achieved woman she really is. So she talked about the fact that she was awarded a scholarship to go to veterinary school, but she said she wasn't actually able to attend because of the cost, and she then from there went into adult films. Now she's also been telling us about the time that she met Donald Trump. She alleges that that was in Lake Tahoe during a celebrity golf tournament, and she says that she met him on the golf course and they had a brief encounter. Later on, they re-met, she says, in a suite. All of this painting a picture of how the two of them met and then what she says became an affair.
Israeli military says it's taken operational control of the Palestinian side of the Rafah crossing in southern Gaza and says it's conducted targeted strikes in eastern Rafah. It comes after Israel rejected Hamas's agreement to a ceasefire deal proposed by Egypt and Qatar, saying the terms are unacceptable, with an Israeli delegation on its way to Cairo to negotiate further. FSN Sarah Coates reports from Tel Aviv.
Both the Rafah crossing and the Kerem Shalom crossing remain closed, really compounding the suffering of these people down in Gaza who are now being forced to move yet again from the east of Rafah, with this Israeli operation looking like it may expand in the coming days. But certainly we are hearing from players, international bodies around the region calling on Israel to reconsider this ground operation, which right now we do understand is just of limited scope.
Ukraine's security service has claimed that it's foiled a Russian attempt to assassinate Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and other high-ranking officials in the country. FSN's Megumi Lin has more from Kiev.
The SBU, which is Ukraine's security service, said it had uncovered a network of Russia's Federal Security Service agents who were preparing an assassination of President Zelensky, along with SBU Chief Vasyl Malyuk and Ukraine's military intelligence head Kirill Budanov. Two colonels of Ukraine's State Security Administration were accused of leaking classified information to Russia and were reportedly detained. Malyuk, the SBU chief, said the attack, which was supposed to be a gift to Russian President Vladimir Putin for his inauguration, was a failure.
From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks. It was a former US President, Harry Truman, who once said, "If you want a friend in Washington, get a dog." Well, the governor of South Dakota did get a dog, but her decision to shoot it dead may have just cost her the vice presidency of the United States. Governor Kristi Noem is openly vying to become Donald Trump's running mate this November. And in her new autobiography, designed to boost her chances of being picked, she explains her decision to kill a puppy called Cricket that she claims was untrainable. Amid public uproar, she's now changed the story to suggest that Cricket was a threat to human life. At least that's what she told Fox News.
It was a dog that was extremely dangerous, and I had a choice between keeping my small children and other people safe or a dangerous animal, and I chose the safety of my children.
There is more. She also claims in her memoir to have met North Korean strongman Kim Jong-un, except she now concedes that meeting never occurred and is blaming her ghostwriter for that false claim. Influential Republicans like the former Speaker of the House of Representatives Newt Gingrich say there is now no possibility Governor Noem will become Donald Trump's running mate, and it was notable that she did not attend in person a fundraising event over the weekend at which the former president appeared to be assessing some figures on his vice presidential shortlist. With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks.
And the main news again, the adult film star Stormy Daniels, at the centre of Donald Trump's hush money trial, has begun testifying in a New York court. The Israeli military says it's taken control of the Palestinian side of the Rafah crossing in southern Gaza, and Ukraine says that it's foiled a Russian attempt to assassinate Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and other high-ranking officials. There's more from us on X at Feature Story. That's Feature Story News. Nick Harper reporting.
Okay, and we are back. Gonna use this new software. I tell you what, the end product is so much better than what we had before. Easier to do once you get the hang of it. Now we're going to go and take a commercial break here. And our Thursday hop message.
This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Context drives behavior. Context drives behavior.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
Yes, Jessica, I am your father.
Anyway, going to some of our other news for today. All right, Fall Protection Week continues. Now, one thing I do not understand here, and I'm going to share a screen here for this. That's not the screen I want to share. That's my email. Hold on. Here, hang on. Give me a second. All right. So here we have OSHA. All right, this was the big news today with OSHA. Right, they are going to restructure what they're doing. I don't get it, to be honest with you. I don't get it. Well, what do you mean, Jim, you don't get it? I don't get it. Why are they restructuring their plan? Do they think people are going to like them more? That's what it sounds like. I just erased everything here. So, no, we've been dealing with this for several years now. We have, now, since, I don't know, I think it's since the end of World War II, where they went to divide up the country. It's probably when, before that also, where they wanted to divide up the country into different zones. And this is the current scheme right here. Let's see if we can share this. Right, current application. Oh, here it is. So this is what the scheme is here with this. They have the OSHA offices that are divided into 10 different regions. Should have had this done in Department of Labor plans to restructure workplace safety and health regional operations. Right, so what we have, no, we've had this region 1 through 10 and everything else in between, right, 1 through 10, and that reads as follows. Right, region 1 was Boston, region 2 was New York, region 3 Philadelphia, region 4 Atlanta, region 5, region 6, and then region 7, 8, 9, and 10. And they're all broken out by different areas here. And no, some of them areas, they make sense, some of them don't. So for example, region 2 where we are at, we have New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, which makes business in region 2 a little bit expensive because people have to go and travel with the GAO contracts and everything else. Region 2, or anything else, they got to travel to Puerto Rico or the U.S. Virgin Islands. Costs a lot of money. And I'm sorry, it sounds a little bit, in the other wars out there, InfoWars, make a joke out of this. No, from deep within region FEMA region 6, deep within FEMA region 5 or region 4. No, this is blah, 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 blah. And now I've toyed around with doing that here on this show. It sounds a little bit cumbersome. So they said, well, we don't like the way that sounds. I guess that's the reason why I can't find out anywhere why they're doing this, right? Why they're renaming things. Is it, like, seriously, is it really to go and, marketing-wise, we're going to market ourselves a little bit better, right? Where region 1 is no longer called region 1, it's called the Boston region. Region 2 is called the New York City region, except the New York City region is also going to include the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. So how is that the New York City region? Then you have, well, we can't call it whatever. We have to call it the Philadelphia area region, even though
Region 3, Philadelphia, is Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Virginia, and Delaware and Maryland. So how is that the Philadelphia region? I prefer Region 1, Region 2, right? Rather than, oh, well, Philadelphia region. Now, you're somewhere in West Virginia on the Kentucky border. You're having an issue with whatever. Who do you call? Do you call the West Virginia office? And, yeah, okay, they have a local officer. I get it. But, no, you have to go to the Philadelphia area office. This is sort of like when is it to divide us a little bit? Is there a little bit of conspiracy here to divide us? Because I tell you what happens, we have New York here and New Jersey. New York and New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey. You have Northern New Jersey, which is distinctly New York. They like the New York sports teams. They like, unless you're going to be a Rebel, then you like Boston, right, or Philadelphia. And, is it pork roll? Is it Taylor ham? And you get this rivalry going on, right? And, well, is it this? And for years, politically, it was horrible. It goes right down the old East Jersey, West Jersey line here with that. Same thing with New York. You go out to Nassau or Suffolk County, a.k.a. Long Island, and the five boroughs in New York City, which are all individual counties, totally different electorate, totally different needs, totally different everything from up in Buffalo, Syracuse, Watertown, right? Totally different. Divide. Now, my question is, are you going to call it the Philadelphia region? And, okay, great, it's the Philadelphia region, but you're going to include Virginia? That's like a 7-hour, 8-hour, more than that. No, the Kentucky-Virginia border from Philadelphia is like 11-hour drive, 12-hour drive. Forget about getting a plane or a train out there. I don't know. It's jerky a little bit. I don't know. That's my opinion. I just leave the old things, the old things. Even better yet, the San Francisco region. San Francisco region is Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Nevada, Arizona, California, American Samoa, Hawaii, Guam. I forget what MP is. What's MP? Forget what MP is. I don't know. Geography. What is MP? The Marshall Island area? I don't know. I don't know if this is smart. I don't know if this is wise. I don't know what the hell, what the hell they're doing. Okay, we have a couple minutes here. Let's see what we have. So going back to fall protection, two related North Jersey construction contractor companies have agreed to pay $215,000 in penalties and undertake several significant safety measures to resolve numerous safety violations found at five Patterson construction work sites in 2021. I believe I've had this company call me up for this, and it just didn't work out. We'll leave it at that. So they settled with OSHA, and they came up with a stipulated thing. So this is where it comes down to. They withdrew a lot of these things, right? Like I said at the beginning of the program, the beginning of almost every program, these are a lot of these things are proposed that we talk about, and they get vacated, litigated, and everything else. So they were able to vacate. OSHA was able to vacate. Was able to vacate a whole bunch of stuff here, all right, for them. So it was the proposed penalties and everything else. And that's basically what happened and what are some of the things that they have to do. Conduct a pre-job hazard assessment. Ensure field employees receive 10-hour OSHA training. Ensure supervisors receive 30-hour OSHA training. Require subcontractors to document with photographs that compliant handrails and stair rails are in place during the course of work, and retain a safety consultant. Notify OSHA of the company's upcoming projects. So they were able to fight some of these things and litigate them and get them vacated. Let's hope that it works out well for the employees. We're going to end a few minutes early here with our standard outro. And I will see you, God willing, tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Polzel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant, that's Safety Wars. Join a safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
Professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.